Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick. Coming up in this episode, we're going to go on a filmmaking adventure all over the world, and then we're going to talk about the worst qualities people can have.
The big motivator is always to be exploring and to be in wild places, and you end up in these crazy places that, you know, humans typically would never be or shouldn't be probably, and you know what the possible outcome could be. The possible outcome could be is that you could die.
Have you lost friends or anything? I mean, have people died doing this kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah. I've probably lost 75 to 100 friends, you know, and just live those dreams and chase those dreams and become good at what you want to be good at rather than succumbing to the formula that society pushes us into.
There's going to be tens of thousands of people that just storm Area 51.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
I've been known to exaggerate the truth, but it's not lying.
Like, one of my biggest pet peeves is when people, then there's like a free sample out at a Costco or a grocery store, and everybody's lined up around this damn thing like they've never had food before. I want to thank you guys so much for joining us. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. So, you know those movies where you see somebody climbing Everest or crossing Antarctica or doing all these kind of really extreme action sports? I've always really liked those movies. They always hook me in. Recently, though, I started thinking about who's shooting this? Who's getting the video of these people doing these things? Our first guest is one of those adventure filmmakers. He's been an adventure filmmaker for more than 20 years, and he has some really amazing stories about these different athletes that he's worked with, these different places that he's been. But also, I think it's really inspiring to hear him talk about having the courage to go out there and do what it is that you really want to do, even if that thing might be incredibly difficult and incredibly dangerous. This is Dirk Collins. What was it that really kind of got you started in this career path, so to speak? Was it adventure or was it photography that really got you going?
Yeah, I guess quickly just a little background. I was raised in Alaska in a little native village in western Alaska with maybe 100 people. And that was a phenomenal kind of upbringing, just as far as like living with and kind of getting to know indigenous cultures a little more, and you know, living off the land, and that was a phenomenal kind of early childhood that kept me in the mountains and in the outdoors, or started me there. And then I went to high school in Anchorage and kind of grew up skiing, and so what kind of got me started on my path is skiing, and just skiing from, you know, an early age of two, both Nordic and Alpine skiing, and then taking that into like, this is, you know, I want to continue to do this. And so that turned into guiding and working on ski patrol, you know, in my teens. And then kind of photography. My dad and my grandfather both loved photography. They weren't professionals at it, but they loved photography. And so there was always cameras around as a kid. And so I became fairly proficient at that. And then kind of the skiing path and the photography path sort of collided at about the age of maybe 22 or something. And we started, myself and three other buddies started Teton Gravity Research and a film production. And that's really where it all began. And then we really kind of went down that path in an effort to facilitate the lifestyle of skiing first and traveling, and then the photography and the filmmaking, supported that. And over time we got better and better at both, and kind of the professional side of some of the skiing and whatnot sort of faded away to being more of a professional.
What was always, though, the big motivator behind that?
The big motivator is always to be exploring and to be in wild places and experiencing and living, right? Living every day and being in the present, and this was just my tool to get me there. So the motivation behind pretty much everything I do is getting out and exploring and meeting new people and seeing, the special places of the world.
Do you think that those special places are still as special as they used to be, or are they kind of coming into the modern world and losing some of that?
Oh yeah, no. Unfortunately, we're losing, constant right now. It's a pretty sad state in a lot of ways of just where the world is going and where we're going with wild and places, and then with wildlife and the other creatures that occupy this planet with us, unfortunately. But at the same time, there's a lot of people working hard and trying to make a difference. And so I think you have to kind of be on that path. Like, what can I do to help with this? How do we keep fighting for conservation and for some hope to keep places wild?
When you first started out, I mean, were you pretty good right from the get-go, or did you make a lot of mistakes in the beginning?
That answer is there's a lot of mistakes, right? Anything that I think that you start out as or start out doing and that you want to be good at is going to take time, and there's going to be mistakes made along the way. And if you're not making mistakes, then you're not learning either, right? And so it's kind of like if you're not falling down or you're not getting kind of scuffed up with some of your sports, then you're not progressing. You're not getting better. You're just kind of remaining status quo. To get better at anything, you need to get in the mix and you need to get scuffed up and make mistakes in order to get better and gain experience. And then from there, you learn and adapt and begin to master your craft if you're lucky.
How much of your life is kind of these really cool experiences, and how much of it is, because for example, we talked with a National Geographic photographer a couple of weeks ago, and he was like, no, most of my life is actually spent writing grants.
With Pete.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I listened to that, actually. When you reached out to me, I was like, oh, here's an interview with Pete. So I just went and listened to that. And so, yeah, so he's right in a lot of ways. And so that's the challenge, right? Is finding the balance between the two. How do I, have enough work that I stay busy and then doing the things I want to do? And then also how do I, kind of keep outside and staying fit, and then, being in the field shooting and capturing and telling the stories that, we really want to do.
When you're looking at this, is there a lot of work that's available in this kind of avenue? Like, or do you have to really, are you turning down stuff or are you scrounging for stuff?
It depends, right? I think it depends on where your direction is and how hungry you are to eat or how hungry you are to be in the field, right? If you just want to pay the bills and a little more financially secure, then I think you can spend a lot of time in the office and really, focus on building the business. And I've done that in past businesses and partnerships. And that's a good way. But like I said, you kind of like, why am I doing this? Why am I on this career path? And why am I trying to be a creative? And why am I trying to be a filmmaker? And And if the answer is because you want to be out in the mountains or you want to be living this life of adventure and trying to tell stories that make a difference or sell a product or promote a brand or whatever that is, then you need to be doing that. And that may lead you down a path where, you know, you're taking risks and, you know, financially and, you know, as well as kind of physically, things aren't quite as secure. Whereas if you just stay in the office and build the business and you know, have teams out there working for you, then you can keep things a lot more consistent. So I think it comes down to each person's kind of, you know, drive and commitment. And
what project, what are you working on now?
It's interesting. I'm working on a few different things right now. Well, I'm actually up in eastern Wyoming at the moment, working on a project with the Lakota Sioux around Indian relay races, and kind of trying to tell a story. We're actually just doing some research on this right now, but trying to figure out, you know, where a story can go, kind of between this horse racing, which is phenomenal, and kind of the story, you know, around you know, native cultures and you know, and the present state of where we are kind of in our country with them, and trying to put a positive spin on that. And, you know, I'll go shoot a car commercial, you know, this week as well, because I need to eat dinner, et cetera. So
you've been to the top of Everest. What's it like to stand up there?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, because it's different. It's different than other mountains. Like, you can climb a lot of mountains and whatnot. It's definitely different. I think for a couple of reasons. I think part of it's that, you know, it's the altitude's high, and so you're in a little bit of a different mindset. You know, things have a different color to them. You know, there's definitely this crazy energy and high altitude, and on any of the big peaks, it's definitely different than other mountains. I think in some ways it's a lot of the same, right? You're looking for solitude and challenge, and it's a little different from the experience, because you know, you're at these altitudes that are much higher, and so your body's different. You're kind of dealing with internal struggles, you know, mentally and physically. And then things have a different look and feel about them because you're high, and so colors are different. The sky is a different color oftentimes, like, and you're kind of on the edge in some ways. And so you're trying to balance decision making, as always, not just on big mountains, but you're trying to balance this decision making with, like, how far can I go forward and still get back if I need to, and not just getting so caught up in the goal that you lose sight of why you're actually there.
How do you even kind of shoot in those kind of environments?
Working in remote locations and particularly cold locations a lot of times, as well as dry and hot and, you know, wet and stormy and at the tip of the, you know, the top of the world and the bottom of the world and, you know, everywhere in between is sort of what, you know, I've specialized in, and the teams of folks that I work with specialize in. And so there's not a ton of us out there that do that, but there are some, and it's being an athlete yourself. It's having a lot of experience working in difficult situations. And then it's having kind of this creative drive that, where you want to kind of push through and tell stories no matter what the conditions are. And it takes a lot of energy and a lot of focus and some suffering along the way. And so, you know, it's not easy, but you kind of put yourself in the climber standpoint, you know, for reference of this trip, you know, climbing Everest. So first and foremost, you become, you know, like, I'm a climber. And then second, I've got this job on top of that I need to capture and create and develop this story. And so you kind of, you know, first of all, look for a team that you can either work with or that can assist you in accomplishing that. And then you pull together the equipment that sort of fits into that model and mode of, you know, of the goal, and then kind of, you know, also with whatever budget you're working in. And then you kind of put yourself out there and dive in and become the person that you're trying to tell the story about. The only difference is that you're actually shooting and taking photos, and then, you know, trying to come up and pay attention to the different storylines, as well as working with your team, or in some instances, you know, handling all the DIT and, you know, whatnot at night, you know, on your own, charging batteries, dumping footage, you know, and getting ready for the next day. So,
and what's the kind of the wildest situation you've gotten yourself into trying to get a shot?
That's a funny question and interesting. And I think that really changes over the course of a career, at least over the course of my career, and continues to evolve, you know, every year, if not, you know, more often. But I think, you know, from early on, you know, in my filmmaking career, you know, and when I was, you know, started Teton Gravity Research, we were really focused on, you know, big ski lines and pioneering terrain that hadn't been skied in Alaska and, you know, all over the world. And so we'd end up putting ourselves in some pretty crazy positions, you know, on mountains, you know, via, a lot of times via helicopter, sometimes via climbing. And you end up in these crazy places that, you know, humans typically would never be or shouldn't be probably. And then that kind of moves on. And as things, you know, change and develop and my, you know, my focus has evolved, you know, you end up, you know, on a boat sailing from Cape Town, South Africa to East Antarctica, and then back across to Perth in, you know, 60 days across the Southern Ocean twice. And, you know, on a project with, you know, another buddy of mine, Mike Horn. And so you end up in, you know, situations that are just as dangerous and just as unforgiving, and just as, you know, maybe probably more remote. That's probably the most remote place on the world, on the planet you can find these days. And so, and now with Lakota Sioux, like totally different situations, some more dangerous than others, but all of them challenging.
Have you ever been in a place where you felt like, wow, we shouldn't be here?
No. You kind of slide into those things knowing to some extent, like, hey, this is the challenge I'm going into, and these are the dangers that I'm facing. And, you know, as things start to evolve, like, you know what the possible outcome could be. The possible outcome could be is that you could die. And so you do everything you can to manage that risk and balance the risk aspects around that on a, you know, a day to day, hour to hour, minute by minute basis. And if you're doing that, then you shouldn't be completely surprised or shocked by what happens.
Have you lost friends or anything? I mean, have people died doing this kind of stuff?
Oh yeah. So over the course of, you know, the time that I've been in this, you know, on this path, I've probably lost 75 to 100 friends, you know, and in 30 years or something like that, you know, since I was, you know, pretty young participating and then moving through filmmaking and photography and, you know, exploration. And so that's a lot of people to lose, and a lot of friends to, and acquaintances to kind of, say goodbye to. And so it definitely, I have a totally different outlook on life and death than some people, I think, and the way I deal with it, and you know, others around me, and whether they're athletes or, you know, filmmakers or guides or whatever, you know, we all kind of have a little bit of a different take on it because we're around those situations a lot. I can say that I've never seen a fatality, and we've had, you know, injuries, but typically not, you know, crazy debilitating injuries on a shoot. So no one's ever died on a project I've worked on. And usually we're in and out of there pretty cleanly. People do get hurt, but we always have plans in place to, you know, deal with those situations. And so
for somebody sitting in their living room, I mean, that seems like an unbelievable number. Is it generally, and I know how hard it is to speak generally, but is it because people make mistakes and mistakes happen, or is it just because you're in this environment and things happen in these kind of environments?
I think it's a few things. In my case, is that I cross over and work in a lot of different spaces and a lot of different sports, and I have a lot of different friends defrost those, and then you take that and put that in environments, you know, around the world, and where people are pushing the limits of human capabilities as well as, you know, the sports they're involved in, and you start to put all that together, and people are gonna die. But at the same time, we're all doing things that we love. It wasn't like, oh, he got, you know, killed crossing the street or, you know, some unfortunate accident. He was actually doing what he wanted to do, and he knew what he was doing, and it was calculated and so on. And so I think looking at it from that standpoint, it's a little different than just sitting in your you know, being home and kind of reflecting on it as a person who wouldn't be involved in the activities directly or in the lifestyle that we live in. And yeah, it's definitely rough, and it's tough seeing and losing people, but at the same time, it's phenomenal, you know, living in the moment and living and working with people that are present and are, you know, pushing themselves and pushing their sports and pushing human capabilities and loving what they do.
From what I saw on your website, you work a lot with some of the biggest athletes in those kind of adventure sports. Is there something that they have in common?
Yeah, for sure. I think they all have in common a passion to live their life and pursue, you know, pursue that passion and to pursue living their life on a day-to-day basis. This is chosen that they're doing that through these sports. And so there's this energy that they all have and this excitement and this want or need to be out there, you know, not only doing the sport, but living and being involved in a space where you're part of the environment and you're sharing this experience that's pretty big. And so there's a lot of drive, there's a lot of enthusiasm, and there's a lot of camaraderie, and that's constant across everything we do.
We've talked a lot about kind of living in the moment. Can you do that outside of these kind of things, or is it this the way that you pursue that? Like, how could somebody listening to this live in the moment without having to, you know, climb K2 necessarily?
Right. No, I think that then, to me, living in the moment is really means, you know, pursuing your own dreams and pursuing your passions. And I don't think that definitely is not relegated to, you know, these risky sports and risky expeditions. I think you can, you know, whatever your passion is, if that's science or education or whatever, just live those dreams and chase those dreams and become good at what you want to be good at rather than succumbing to the formula that society pushes us into, which is kind of this, you know, get a job, you know, be safe, build a retirement, you know, have security, and instead of like actually doing something you believe in and trying to make a difference or trying to live in a way, where you're, you know, pursuing something that you believe in. It's hard to say it's a job if you're, you know, if you're loving what you're doing every day. You're still working your ass off and you're still out there trying to get it done, but you love what you're doing rather than going every day and sitting in the cubicle and doing something that you don't have any interest in and you're just trying to get a paycheck.
Coolest athlete you've ever worked with?
Ooh, that's tough. I don't think there is a coolest athlete I've ever worked with. I've got different athletes in different sports that I have worked with that are, you know, phenomenal in that specific genre or that specific kind of athletic endeavor. I think it's more of, again, it's this attitude of having the drive and the motivation to be the best in the world.
You've obviously been a lot of places. What do you think is the, in terms of a place that everybody should see, the most beautiful place? What's your number one?
There's so many as far as like specific locations go. I think I'm continually blown away by what's in my backyard. And my backyard's big, right? Like it's not a couple miles or whatever. There's a radius around my backyard that may be a little bigger than some people's, but it's just what's in your, you know, what can you do from your house in, you know, a couple of days to me always blows my mind. Like for example, right now I'm in Eastern Wyoming, and it's beautiful out here. I stumbled across this canyon the other day that's and just a few hours from my house, and it's 900 feet deep. And it looks like the Grand Canyon, and it's like, where, how did I miss this for a little while? So I think it's just being willing to get out there and explore, and not thinking that, oh, I have to go to the other side of the world to have an adventure. The adventure, you know, it's in the park, you know, down the street. It's in the hills behind, you know, behind town. You don't have to always go to the other side of the world to find these phenomenal places. It's more about the mindset and just the, you know, having the desire and the motivation to make the time to get out and be present.
What do you got coming up, man? What's next for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're trying to figure out where we're going with this project that we're doing research on right now, which I think could be a really amazing story. I've got a North Pole project we're trying to pull off this fall with Mike Horn, who I was in Antarctica with a couple of years ago. The projects and kind of the that I'm working on you've kind of got to have a few of them going at once because they always experience delays and setbacks. And so one might be moving forward and then it gets jammed up or stops. And so, okay, where is this one going? And at the same time, you put another one on the shelf because it had no interest. And then all of a sudden, you know, someone calls from, you know, a couple of years ago and is like, hey, it's the right time for us to pick this up again. And so it's a moving target. It's always a moving target. And
I want to thank Dirk so much for joining us. If you want to connect with him, we have linked to him on our social media accounts. We're Profoundly Pointless on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you get a chance, check out his Instagram. It's really amazing to see all of the different techniques that he uses and all of the pictures of the different places that he's been. You can find that information, like I just mentioned, on our social media accounts, but also on the RSS feed that's on this podcast. Okay, so now let's go ahead and give John Schull a call, and I'm just gonna try and see if I can get him going about something.
Good evening.
You want to explain yourself?
What did I do now?
You know what you did.
You're gonna have to be a little more specific on that one.
Okay, it was on a Thursday. What do you think you'd messed up on a Thursday?
There's so many things on a Thursday. I'm not entirely sure. Can you be more specific?
No, just give me a good idea of what you've screwed up this week. It doesn't have to be specifically to any one thing. Just in general, what did you mess up this week?
Well, just by getting out of bed, usually I ruin my wife's day, so there's that.
Okay, give me two more.
You should list your three, and then I'll come up with two.
I didn't really do anything this week, honestly.
Yeah, I don't think I messed up really anything.
No, I was just trying to see if I could convince you into it. Because this is always something that I've thought. Like if someday I got pulled over and the officer was like, You just robbed that bank back there, I don't know if I could say with 100% certainty that I did it. Like, I think you could talk me into that I robbed the bank.
I mean, why stop for the police, right? You might as well have a little fun and just go out in a blaze of glory.
What did you do this week to try and improve yourself?
You know, this week was actually it was not a very good week at all, to be honest, in terms of that. Didn't really do anything to improve myself. I think I improved others around me, but myself, I'm not really entirely sure that I did anything.
How did you improve other people?
You know, well, it was a good week at work. Personally, my daughter is no longer in a little kid car seat like the infant ones.
I don't see how you contributed to that in any way. I mean, you didn't do anything.
I had to install the car seat.
That's just basic parental.
I had to go buy the car seat and then I had to install it.
That's just basic parental responsibility. You shouldn't be proud of that.
I am proud of it.
It is kind of hard to install a car seat. I'll give you that.
I mean, we're talking, these are like, I mean, you know how it is. This is like the full front, like, up to 120 pounds booster seat. This thing, you could strap my kid in and send her to NASA, or send her to space, and she'd be all right.
How many people do you think that NASA is actually in space right now? Like, they've got a tower up there. That's where people work.
Probably a good 10% of Americans. That actually makes me. What are your opinions on this whole Area 51 idea, where there's going to be tens of thousands of people that just storm Area 51?
Can't wait. Can't wait.
One, would you do it? And two, do you think there's going to be any resistance from a quote-unquote dark force?
What do you mean a quote-unquote dark horse? I don't know what you're...
Force, like a... Like the...
Like Star Wars? Like Vader's coming back? What are you talking about?
No, like the... I forget, they have a specific name, but they're like the government agents that protect the grounds of Area 51. They have some cool nickname. And cool. I just called them Dark Force because I couldn't remember the actual name.
Oh, okay. So you just made that whole thing up and expected people to believe you. That's fine. Number one, I would not be there, but I would certainly watch it. Like, I would get some popcorn. I would take the day off work to watch people storm Area 51. Because I feel like the people who are actively storming Area 51, they're probably not going to give up real easily, you know? If you're going to do that, you're going to go big or go home. But I don't know what you do once you get to, like, hey, how are you going to get over this? That's the thing. That's the amazing thing I think about of anything, any kind of government, anything like that, right? Like, ultimately, if there's just a ton of people, what are you going to do? Are you going to shoot them all? You can't do that. I don't think they're going to find anything, though. That's the thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was actually someone that posted this on Twitter.
Did you steal this idea from somebody else?
No. I mean, this story's been out there, but someone posted on Twitter that, you know, these people have a better chance of finding weapons of mass destruction than they do, you know, any other kind of life forms.
I just feel like that would be, let's just say that would be a thing that would be too hard to keep secret, right? Like, none of those people have families. They would never mention, oh, by the way, talk to an alien today to their wife. And like, none of that would ever leak out. There's just such a massive amount of secrecy that nobody would find out.
Truth be told, I mean, right, if I'm not mistaken, it's the workforce there has been scaled back tremendously just in, like, the last 20 years. I mean, who knows? Maybe in the 60s and 70s and 80s, when it wasn't so easy to get information out, maybe there was stuff there. I have no idea. I mean, I don't think there was, but... It wouldn't surprise me if at one point maybe they had something there that was weird or, you know, rare. But I don't – I mean, you're talking to a guy who questions dinosaurs. You think that I believe in aliens?
That's a good question. Do you?
No, I wouldn't say I believe in aliens. I'm not sure. I'm not ruling out that I don't believe in some kind of other life force.
Well, what else would they – what do you mean? Whoa. Other life force? Like, what do you mean other life force?
Well, I mean, you know, we've kind of mentioned it in the past. You know, the galaxies and the universe is so big. I mean, I'm not saying maybe there could be like an Earth 2 somewhere where there's other humans, or maybe, you know, there's alien planets. But in terms of like what we think an alien is, I don't think there's like, you know, a little green thing with, you know, two big black eyes just hanging out of Area 51.
See, that's what I don't understand about your thought process, right? Like, you don't believe in dinosaurs or the possibility of alien life, but you do believe in extra-dimensional multiverse alien life. Like, I don't understand that. Like, you just skip over the most basic thing, don't believe that, and go straight to kind of the extreme theory.
You know, I got nothing for you. It's my weird-ass brain. And I need to retract a little bit on my dinosaur statement. It's not that I don't believe that they may have existed. I just, you know, I need like evidential proof. I need fossils. I need someone to bring me like a Stegosaurus fossil to my house with a bag of shit, you know, which our last episode covered great. And I can study that, and then I can look at the fossils, and I can, you know, just have a great day.
You could go to a museum. They have all that right there. You've never been to a museum?
I have, but I also have thoughts on museums as well. But that's another.
Let's hear this. What's your thought on museums?
I always wonder if things in the museums are the actual artifacts.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. I do think that sometimes maybe they have, like, the real thing is actually inside of the museum, like in a vault somewhere. And maybe they have a replica that's on display for people, but that doesn't mean that the thing itself isn't real, right? It's just, like, that's not the particular version of it.
Like, let me tell you a story about when Little John was really upset, okay? Regarding to going to a museum. We have a really good museum here called Henry Ford, the Henry Ford Museum. They have cars and trains and all this other stuff. They had what they were advertising to be the original Weenie Mobile. Okay? I'm probably like 7 or 8, you know, love hot dogs. Who doesn't love hot dogs? Grow up watching this thing on commercials. I get there, and, you know, they let you get in it, blah, blah, blah. I'm all excited. I'm, like, talking to the attendant. The attendant, you know, like, whispers to me, leans over to me, and he's like, I don't want to burst your bubble, kid, but this actually isn't even the real one. There's like 500 of these replicas that the company built as a sham. The real one's like somewhere in like St. Louis, Missouri.
How do you know that guy wasn't just messing with you? Like, he could have ruined your life. Also, let's not forget and leave alone the fact that mainly your educational experience as a child was to go see the Wienermobile at a museum.
they had trains and Model Ts and...
Yeah,
they claim to have the, you know, the car that Kennedy was shot in, which I ended up being a replica.
But did you go to the museum before that, or is this your first trip to the museum specifically to see the Wienermobile?
Listen, I was like 7 or 8, and I was going anyways, but I was excited to see the Wienermobile.
So you didn't answer the question. Was this your first trip to the museum?
Anyone ever tell you you'd be a great debate moderator?
Just that. Why can't you answer the question?
I believe, yes, it probably was my first trip to a museum, I would think.
So your first trip to a museum was to go see the Wienermobile. Thank you for finally getting to the truth of the matter.
It's funny you would say that, because our top five a little bit later on, we, you know, we're talking qualities
yeah.
to people. And and I think I might have just touched on a couple of them that I just committed, so.
Yeah. That's the thing at the end of this. At the end of this, so our we're not going to do it yet, but our top five is top five qualities in people that you dislike the most, like the top five worst qualities a person can have. And after that, we'll then look at how many of those qualities we have, which is probably pretty high on that list. Let me ask you this question, because I think our guest talked about this a little bit. If you knew somebody or saw somebody who was killed or seriously injured doing something, would you then not do that thing?
I would not give it up. No, I would keep doing it. I say that from never having gone through that with someone that you love, you know, dying or whatnot, or like a close friend. But I would think that I would continue doing it.
For people who may have skipped ahead, our guest is Dirk Collins. He's an adventure filmmaker. And one of the things that he said that I just found unbelievable was that he's probably had 75 to 100 people that he's known die doing what he does, but he keeps doing it. Like, I don't know if I could do that.
You know, I always wonder, and, you know, it's a great guest. There was a documentary that just came out. I think it was called Free Fall last year.
Free Solo.
Or Free Solo.
And how bad is that? That I don't even know. Like, I don't even know what you're going to be talking about, but I already know that you're wrong.
Well, I'm not wrong, because I'm not really giving a fact. I'm giving an opinion.
Well, you got the name of the movie wrong.
But that's why you're there, to pick me up, my little buddy teammate. And I wasn't technically all that wrong. Anyways.
Well, yeah, you were. There's two words in the title of the movie.
You're so angry.
You got one of them wrong. You're 50% correct. I'm just looking for a little factual accuracy.
Anyways, what I'm trying to say is that I believe that that documentary, in terms of like that extreme sports, climbing, things like that, really shed the light on how serious and dangerous those jobs are. But it's a passion. So I think if you have a passion for something like that, you understand the risk going in, and it doesn't deter you when tragedy strikes.
See, but I agree with you. I understand that sentiment. But I would think that for me personally, once it passed 20, I would probably go ahead and be like, I don't know if I want to continue to do this. Like, I like riding a motorcycle. But if I saw 5 to 10 people die who I was riding alongside, I would probably stop.
See, so, and that's interesting that you say that. I work with a person who's had... He's a motorcyclist as well. He's part of a biker gang. He's had 3 or 4 people that he knows die either on rides with him or a couple that weren't with him. But he like uses that as like a, you know, now I'm going to ride in remembrance of them.
I can see that a little bit. Do you have a, what's your music that you've been promising us? Let's hear it.
So my band didn't show up this week. We're having some technical issues, which we'll work on for next episode.
Okay, so I doubt that.
I guess you're getting the homemade homemade intro again.
Okay, but don't use your hands at all.
All right. You're going to have to give me 20 seconds, but I'll come up with something here.
No, and you got to keep the phone, so we got to be able to hear it. So let's go.
All right, fine. Here we go. Was that good? I used my head and my feet.
I was wondering. The whole time I was thinking, please use your head. Please use your head. What'd you bang your head on?
A table in the beginning was my foot on a toolbox, and then on the side of my elliptical machine. So it's, you know, getting use out of it.
Nice. Good work. All right, let's hear it.
All right, so for those who don't know, I usually start off asking Nick three things that he can't give me any back talk to. He just has to answer. So let's start off with, it's the summertime, obviously, so you have to pick one to wear. Jean shorts or a cutoff t-shirt?
Oh, shit. How old am I? Current age?
Yeah, current age.
Oh, I got to go cutoff t-shirt then. Jean shorts is just not. You can't wear jorts. You just can't. Unless you're doing it ironically, there is no acceptable reason for a straight man to be wearing jorts. There just is not. There is not, and there never will be. There's just not.
I'm going to give you an assignment this week. I want you to realize how many people around you wear cutoff t-shirts, and we need to have a discussion next week, because I am seeing an absurdly large amount of people wearing cutoff t-shirts where I live.
See, I think the age limit is 18, right? You can wear a cutoff t-shirt until, no, maybe you can wear your first year of college. I think you can get away with a cutoff t-shirt. But after that, you really can't do it anymore, right? You can't wear cutoff t-shirts.
I mean, if you have the arms and you want to show it, whatever, go for it. You probably earned that right.
Then get a tank top.
Sure, right. I mean, get a tank top then, but if you want to wear the cutoff t-shirt, that's fine. It's the people that you can tell they're trying to wear for another objective that you know, just drives me nuts. Anyways, moving on.
You do seem to have a lot of anger directed at people's fashion choices, where they seem to be showing off what they got lately. Is there something you want to tell us?
No, I can tell you though that I didn't start my diet this week, so I failed again at that. So.
Nice, good work.
All right, moving on. So football, pro football officially started once again this week as players reported for camp. So simple question, are you more excited about pro football or college football?
Pro football. I don't really have a college team that I care about. Look, if there's a good college game, I'd rather go in person to a good college game. But pro football is just more interesting to me.
I think college sports in a way are kind of a sham. But anyways, that's a whole different discussion.
Yep.
Lastly, say you have to pick one to eat, a caramel apple or a chocolate banana.
Oh, caramel. Oh, chocolate banana. Caramel apple, actually, when you think about it, is pretty disgusting.
How? It's just caramel. It's just an apple.
Yeah, but it's too sticky, man. Once you get in there, it's like you're going to regret eating that. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that caramel apple, in terms to deliciousness to wish I hadn't have eaten that ratio, is pretty high up there. Like, oh, that was good. I wish I wouldn't have eaten that.
I thought this was interesting that you posted on Twitter was, and I don't know how you expected people to do the math, but how many sandwiches you think you eat in your lifetime? The winner with 38% was 1,000 to 5,000, which I think is like kind of the generic thought, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty, I mean, I would think most people probably go with that. It's really shocking to me just in the sense of like how many times you have probably done something in your life. Like I did the math. I've probably eaten around 9,000 sandwiches. That's just insane to me. Like something that you've done so many times. I mean, I can only imagine what the number is for how many times you've masturbated. That's got to be.
Oh. I mean, if you want, we can keep count. And in next episode, we can, you know, reveal our findings.
Be in the triple digits already. How many times do you think you've done that?
In my life?
you think that you've had in the last 10 years, do you think that you've had more sandwiches or more solo pleasure rides?
Oh, man. I mean, not that I want to reveal this, but I might as well. I'm pretty sure that it's more solo rides for every single person. I would, in a 10-year span as an adult, I think you would be hard-pressed to find one person that has had more sandwiches than solo pleasure rides. And if there is somebody out there that listens to this podcast, let us know, because I would love to interview you, because I don't believe you at all.
Yeah, that's – I mean, let's assume that you have – I mean, 5 sandwiches a week. I bet most people, especially men, probably going to do that more than 5 times. So there's a really good chance.
Probably double dipping. And then if you're single, you're at least 3 to 5 times a day. I mean, you know, it's just being a human. Anyways.
You went 3 to – wow.
Another good poll that was
– how are you not like – I would just think that it'd be wrong. What's the most – what's the highest number – everybody's talked about this and asked a friend about this, like the most times you've done it in a day. What's the highest number that you've ever heard?
I don't want to reveal that. Let's
no, not you, here. But that you have ever heard, like the most you've ever heard somebody do it.
I actually, when I was living in Orlando, someone that we used to work with, who I will remain nameless, told me that they once topped out at near 20 times in a day.
How is that even possible?
It's not possible. But if you think about it, it is possible, but I really don't think it is possible.
What are you doing? You got to be on some kind of medication or something like that to go 20 times in one day.
Yeah, that's...
that's just dust coming out eventually. I would think you don't even have the reserves to physically accomplish that, let alone, I mean, the friction alone.
It's just going to hurt after a while.
I feel like if you push past 3, getting after it, like, whoa, that's a lot. That's just, I mean, who has that much time?
Let's move on here. Another good Facebook poll I thought we had this week was the question, does taking a swim in the summer, in a pool obviously, count as taking a shower?
That's a great question. That's the one that I got mad at you that you had a great question. It was a really good one, and you blew it with the timing of it. I think that it depends on the pool a little bit. Like, I used to do a lot of pool showers when I was in high school. I was like, oh, I could take a shower. I could just jump in the pool and get out, call it a day. If you're talking a private pool, I think that's fine. But if you're going in a public pool,
Let me ask you this, because, I mean, we're kind of on the topic.
Yes, I have.
Were you ever in the pool, in a pool where, unknown to anyone, they have that dye in the water or that chlorine that when someone pees, it turns blue?
Let me ask you this question. This is going to be a trap question. Have you been?
I have been, yes.
Well, no, because I was a lifeguard. That chemical doesn't actually exist.
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe it was the yellow greenish of the pee then. I don't know.
That I could see. Like if you went, I can't tell you how many, as a former lifeguard, I can't tell you how many warm spots I've suddenly gone through. That's just an occupational hazard. Like you go through a warm spot.
I didn't know you were a lifeguard. I also didn't know that the chemical reaction wasn't true.
No, everybody always talked about that and was always, I think it was just a thing put out there to scare people, but never did I ever work at a pool that actually had something like that or had ever heard of it. I don't think it's true. Because if you think about that, right, you get that you would never be able to swim in that pool, right? You would never be able to swim in it because everybody pees in the pool all the time. So having that chemical that turns it, you'd be closed every day.
Well, then poor Ryan Parker, man. He never swam again after we told him he was peeing blue. So
poor Ryan Parker. Are you done? Are you ready for our top 5, or what are you doing?
Hold on. A couple more shout-outs here, then we'll end.
Okay. Well, if this is a different segment, then have different music. And this time, I want you to only – you have to go left foot, right hand.
All right. I think I can do that. All right. Let's do this.
That was good.
Anyways, first off, we need to give a huge shout out to our guest from last week, Daniel McDonald. Fantastic episode if you haven't checked it out. Guess I really don't know what else to say. I think he was probably one of our most riveting guests that I had no idea that poop could mean so much. But
no, I was absolutely amazed at how much you can learn from studying people's poop. If you haven't heard that episode, it's Daniel McDonald of the American Gut Project. It actually is incredibly fascinating what you learn from poop. And you can send him your poop if you would like to, and he'll study it and tell you all about it.
Kudos to you for getting him. That was a great get. He was interesting as hell. Lots of different comments from different people on that, from Alice to Dorothy to a different Nick. The UC San Diego School of Medicine chipped in, getting a hold of us on social media. Just a good all around discussion about shit, which I never thought we would ever do. So. So yeah, keep them coming. Facebook, Instagram, our Twitter, our official unofficial sponsor, Long John Silver's and Gold's Gym. You know, get at them, let them know.
Yeah, Gold's Gym, baby. It's two places we go a lot.
Is it time for us to say our top five worst qualities and then realize that we are those people?
Yeah, pretty much. When I went through it, I was like, I do that. Okay, to get into it, our top five is top five worst qualities that people can have. What's your number five?
I have people who feel entitled.
Okay. I thought about that. It was close for me, but it didn't raise up to that certain level. Why does that bother you so much?
So, I mean, it's on a personal level. And, you know, I come from a pretty poor area, didn't have a lot of money growing up. And Metro Detroit is kind of almost divided in a certain way. But, you know, there's a huge rich section and there's like maybe 10% middle class and there's, you know, the poor. And, you know, schools were the same way with kids. And a lot of times you would see kids rolling up with $200 sneakers, you know, things like that, you know, brand new football cleats, you know, and the attitude went along with the new products, so to speak. So I just grew up always kind of not appreciating people who felt entitled, you know, to things like that just because they were born into it or grew up in it or, you know, things like that.
So my number five isn't a great one, but to me it just ruins the whole person. So I felt like I had to put it on there. It's somebody with an annoying laugh.
Have you ever ended a friendship or just like cut somebody out of your life if you can? Because their laugh is just so annoying?
No, because I wouldn't ever involve that person in my life in the first place. Like, I would never get to that point where I had to cut them out because of it, because it wouldn't ever start.
Now, you know, if I had put that on my list, you would ask me to give an example. So I kind of want you to give me an example, but I know you're not going to.
See, I don't know how to respond to that, because no matter what I do, you've kind of trapped me there. So I'm just going to move on to number four. What's your number four?
People who are closed-minded.
Okay, I had that as number two. I feel like that should be a little bit higher because it's hard to deal with anybody that's closed-minded, right? Like, you can't do anything with that person. You can't have a conversation with them. You can't go try to do new things.
Right, and I know we try to stay away from politics on this show, but I wrote it down on my shitty notepad here that's one of the main things. Is like people are just close-minded about change or the political layout of things. Like it's just the worst, especially when they're like good people and they just like won't see any, you know, they won't even look at any other picture other than the one that, you know, they think is best.
Well, and I think that, look, like we'll stay out of the politics of it, but I think that no matter what side that you're on, I think that everybody can agree that has increased, that seems to have been more prevalent. Like the annoyance of it, of people who are like that on both sides, that seems to have gotten worse over the last couple of years. Give me that annoying laugh now.
No, you have to give me the annoying laugh.
I don't have any examples at all. You asked me to ask you.
It was your number five.
I'm not the one who asked you to do it. You asked me.
You can't turn it around on me. So I'm going to pull a Nick and I'm going to say, moving on, what's your number four?
You're the one who asked me. You wanted me to ask you to do an example of annoying laugh. And then when I asked you, you said that you couldn't do it. And then I was supposed to do it.
All I said was, I'm going to pull a Nick. And if that was me that had that as my number five, you would have asked me to give an example. So I asked you to give an example. and you moved on.
What's your number three?
What's your number four?
Oh, wasn't that? Oh. People who have no self-awareness. Somebody just with just absolutely clueless. You know, like they'll do something and then get mad at somebody else for doing the exact same thing that they do. That drives the shit out of me in annoyance terms.
So let me ask you this. So I've been accused of not having the best self-awareness when I'm inebriated. Does that count?
No, not really. I mean, I feel like that's almost endearing.
Oh, well, thank you.
On someone else.
No.
But I don't, you lack maybe a little bit of self-awareness, but it's more like kind of dummy self-awareness. It's not annoying self-awareness.
I mean, I do this podcast, for God's sakes, talk about wrong decisions.
Yeah, ain't that the truth. Okay, what's your number three?
I have people who are hypocritical.
Okay. I thought about that a lot. I didn't put it on there, though. It didn't raise to that level for me.
I'm just not a fan, and once again, I don't think I do it. I'm pretty sure I don't do it, but I'm not a fan of people who, you know, will sit there and ridicule somebody or put somebody down, you know, and then turn around and then, you know, it could be a day, it could be an hour, it could be 3 months later, they're doing that activity or they're, you know, now friends with that person. Or, you know, it's just, you know, there's no need to present a fake you, you know, to project something that you don't believe to hide something. You know, to put somebody else down. I just never appreciated that about a person.
I feel like you're getting a little emotional about these.
I know. I just halfway through that, I was like, "Damn, I sound like I'm really upset about something."
Yeah, you do. I mean, you've been going off. I wasn't listening, but I just heard it.
What's your number three?
People who are lazy.
That's fair. I mean, no, you're talking about like perennial lazy people, right? Like not.
Yeah, because we're all a little bit lazy. I mean, everybody's got some laziness, but people who are just, especially laziness where like this could have been something more and you just didn't do it. Like that kind of laziness pisses me off. I don't mind the lay on your couch all day laziness if that's what you want to do. But when you had an opportunity and then you blow it because you're too lazy, that annoys me. What's your number two?
My number two are, and that's pretty generic, but people who are selfish.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's pretty much self-explanatory. I won't get emotional on this one, but, you know, selfishness is okay, I think, to a certain degree, like on a personal level, but you can't be that way, like, in life. Like, you can't, you know, it's fine if you want to, like, say, hey, I need 2 hours to myself for whatever reason or, you know, but, you know, people who are selfish and only look out for themselves and could care less about anyone or anything around them, that's not going to work.
I thought you weren't going to get emotional.
I know. I'm giving like little examples of every number here.
What happened to you growing up?
I don't. You know, maybe we should have an episode where we interview our fathers.
That won't go well.
Well, you already said your number two, right?
Yeah, my number two is closed-minded, so I can give me your number two. Give me your two.
I just gave you my number two.
Oh, I wasn't paying attention at all. How selfish of me.
my number one, it should be universal, is, you know, people who lie.
Yeah, that's – so my number one is I'm going to give that – it's a three-way tie technically, but I feel like they're basically all the same thing. My number one is lying, untrustworthy, and unreliable. I feel like that's really all the same thing though.
I think being unreliable is kind of its own, but you know, I'll give it to you. I've been known to exaggerate the truth, but it's not lying. What I mean is like people who are, especially the people who tell a lie, but they've made themselves believe the lie, so to them it's reality.
Oh, I do that.
Do you? I don't think you do.
I don't know. I'm not even sure, to be honest with you. I mean, that could have been a lie right there.
Maybe everything I've told you, our entire friendship or whatever,
could
you
be
want
a whole
lie.
You know, I don't think I am generally pretty honest with people. I would say about 90 to 95% of the time, I'm pretty honest. But when I do lie, I will convince myself that that's the truth, and I have no problem with it.
I mean, anyone will tell you that I I'm a like wear your heart on the sleeve kind of person. If I try to lie, you can see it a million miles away. So I don't lie. I mean, I just, man, there's nothing that I hate more than someone who lies and then they, like I said, they believe it. Like, it's just, you know, you create the issue. Stop trying to believe the issue, you know, when it's a lie. It just makes no sense to me. Anyways, I'm ranting again. I'm sorry.
Do you have tissues? Are you going to, go outside and take a walk after this?
Can we just end it so I can go grab one? I am getting kind of emotional.
What's in your honorable mention?
So I had Unreliable. I also had, and I wanted to put this one on my top five, but I didn't think it was strong enough, was People Who Are Always Late.
I just assume that people are going to be late, so that doesn't bother me very much.
And then this isn't like a top five, but it would be like my number one or two if we were doing like a straight like little nag list, and it's like people who like eat like they're not humans. Like people who chew with their mouth wide open or like breathe heavy when they eat, you know. I don't know if that's necessarily a quality. It is a quality, but I don't know if it's considered like, you know, what we're referring to. But I can't stand – and once again, I understand you have some kind of medical condition that requires you to have to eat differently. But it's the people who like do it on purpose.
What kind of medical?
Piss you off.
What kind of medical condition would someone have where they can't eat?
Well, no, I mean, like maybe someone's on a, you know, like on an oxygen tank or something, you know, and like they,
why would you
they
have
gasp
to?
Of,
why would you even have to qualify that? Like everybody gives that person a free pass. I don't see why you had to put it out there. Like, by the way, if you're handicapped and can't get out of bed, it's okay if you don't show up for gym class. Like everybody knows that. I don't know. See why you have to say it.
Listen, what's your honorable mention?
Well, probably that right there.
What? Handicapped people that can't go to gym class?
I would say people who are self-centered, that annoys me. Hypocritical is up there. That bothers me a little bit. People, you know what? I would say that's probably my like number six would be people with no self-control. Like they can't control themselves. Like one of my biggest pet peeves is when people, then there's like a free sample out at a Costco or a grocery store and everybody's lined up around this damn thing like they've never had food before. That drives me crazy. And I just want to, oh, those people, I hate all of them. Like no self-control.
Yeah, I can't stand those people.
But you know what? At the same time, like I want that damn free sample.
I say that and I'll peek in every now and again. Now, I don't eat like anything that's cooked, but like if it's like a smoothie or something, maybe a little dessert, I'll get in there. Why not?
Why can't you eat something that's cooked?
It's weird to me. Like, you know, like they bring out like a pizza, right? And they cut it into those little squares.
Yeah.
And like everyone's just breathing on it and shit. And like, you know, like which piece do I want? Like at least I know like if it's in a cup, like I can just get it handed to me or, you know, it's just weird. It's one of my pet peeves.
Wow, that's
I'm gonna go grab those tissues now.
You can't handle hot free samples. Is that what you're basically telling me? Okay, now of all the qualities, just list off all your bad qualities.
Oh man, well, in terms of like my top five, I would say maybe the only one that I might exhibit some is closed-mindedness in terms of like I'm a creature of habit and I like. Like what I, you know, like my routine. And I'll admit that sometimes when there's, you know, something new to do or a new adventure that awaits, it takes a lot for me to do it. Like, I really just want to say, no, I just want to sit here and watch NASCAR all day.
Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. We want to hear what you guys think about the interview with Dirk Collins. What are some of the things that you're really passionate about? And that you will kind of pursue no matter what. Like, yeah, there's risk involved. Yeah, it's really difficult to do, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. We want to hear what your guys' experience are with things like that. And we'd also love to hear what you guys think are some of the worst qualities that people can have. We have our social media accounts. That's a great way to connect with us. We're Profoundly Pointless on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And we also have our website, profoundlypointless.com. We love hearing from you guys. It's really interesting to see some of the comments, and we're starting to get more and more of them. So we continue to want to make that more and more a part of this show, assuming that John Schull continues doing what he's doing. I'm going to give it a 60% chance.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.